Now, if you looked at the schedule, we're supposed to go for 2 hours now, take a break and go for two more. I always tell clients when I'm, so I teach every morning almost at React, and I tell them, I see it, I'm pouring water into a cup. Once that cup's full, I can keep pouring, but nothing's gonna be kept. So what I'm probably gonna do is we'll see how it goes, we'll take a break, have a second half, but we'll probably be done early because I think your brains are gonna be well past the saturation point. Two things I just want to mention quickly. One of the things that I've learned over the years is when people come to listen to me, especially if they're addicts, is they will listen to me at a bunch of different levels. So one level is they'll think of their childhood. Level two is what's going on in their relationship right now. And number three, the damage they've done to their kids. So they're feeling guilt, they're feeling pain, they're feeling all kinds of conflicting things going on. So that's kind of what I'm aware of is happening in some of you. Others of you, you just kind of think of it as information and it doesn't really go beyond that. But for many, this affects them at different levels in very powerful ways. One other thing, somebody asked me, what happens? I know I have some complex trauma. I just don't exactly know what caused it. And what I tell clients is don't worry about it. Eventually, you might figure it out more clearly as you get more self-awareness and understanding. But don't obsess on trying to figure it out. Just, you got it. Now let's deal with changing. So the self-awareness that I'm teaching you this morning is very much useful to you, but it might not all be you might not be able to apply all of it right away. It's going to be a gradual growing and understanding. Okay, so now we're going to go into the brain. So that is the brain there on the screen, and I divide it into three basic parts. So the red carrot that goes down is the brain stem. That's the first part of your brain to develop, and that looks after all of your organs, your blood pressure, your breathing, your heartbeat, your digestive system. All of that is subconscious. You don't think about trying to make your heart beat. That's your brain stem. Once it dies, you're dead, okay? The next is the limbic brain. That develops next. So there's two pieces to that that are very important. The first is that is your emotional center of the brain. And that is the child's brain. Now, just think of it this way. If you were to offer a child a chocolate bar or broccoli, they would probably pick the chocolate bar. Why? Because it would make them instantly feel good. So a child makes decisions based on how it makes them instantly feel. So we say that is foolish. Because you're making decisions based on emotions that are all about instant gratification. They're not about what's best for you down the road. So the cerebral brain, the cerebral cortex, is your thinking brain. And God's design was that it would sit in judgment on your limbic brain. And so the child would say, I want a chocolate bar. But then the cerebral brain would say, no. If you get addicted to chocolate bars, you'll end up with health problems down the road. You need to eat healthy food. So your cerebral thinking brain is the adult brain that sits in judgment on everything else and reasons. And so that's the wise brain, okay? Now here's complex trauma, part one with the brain. Fear, what part of the brain is that? The limbic brain. So you want to know what happens when you're in fight flight? You're operating out of your limbic brain only. So for a person with complex trauma, they don't develop their cerebral brain because that only develops when you're in a safe environment, when you can think and weigh things out. When you're in survival mode, you're working out of your limbic brain. So people with complex trauma, they get to be adults, but they're still child brain. And that is critical. So when a child goes, I say this all the time to clients, tell me what's your belly button age and what's your real age. So your belly button age is when you were born, from your mother. Your real age is the age you cope at. So if you went to fight flight as your main way of coping when you're 5 years old, guess what your emotional age is? You might be 50 in your body, you're 5-year-old in your emotional coping. You're still working out of your limbic brain. Now take that a step further. What happens? So if you're an addict, you understand this illustration. Let's say you're texting me one day and I'm answering your texts, and then all of a sudden I don't answer a text. What goes on in your brain? Oh, he must not like me. I must have said something to offend him. Oh, I'm never going to talk to him again. That's going to be too awkward. So what just happened there was this. Their fear limbic got triggered. Then they took their thinking brain and twisted it to fit what they were feeling. So now you have a cerebral brain that gets divided in two parts. One is very wise and logical, but one is very distorted because they think by their emotions, not by what's the facts. So I might have just gone to do a job and I would come back an hour later and continue the conversation, but in their mind, it goes like this. It feels like he's rejecting me, so it must be the truth that he is rejecting me. That is what we call emotional reasoning. And so complex trauma makes your limbic brain be overdeveloped, and then it takes your thinking brain and divides it. One is very distorted to fit your fears, and the other is wise. Guess what is the weakest part? The wise part. And guess what happens? And we know this scientifically. If somebody's been doing well for 20 years and one day their limbic system gets triggered, let's say they have a huge fight in their marriage and the other person threatens to divorce them, they get a shot of cortisol, which I'm going to talk about, and cortisol shuts down your thinking part. So what it does for a person in danger is we don't got time to think right now. We got to react. We got to be in survival mode, fight, flight. Don't think. That'll just get you in trouble. So cortisol actually shuts down thinking. So here's what happens with clients all the time. They got 5 years clean. They've been doing well, developing their cortex. One day they get triggered and they go back to their limbic brain. Their cortex shuts down. They go, it's like I forgot everything I ever learned. I just started reacting again. Did I learn anything? And they get beating themselves up. So complex trauma is limbic brain and then twisted cortex brain, where the most powerful part is the distorted part. So every addict has developed, without even realizing it, in their distorted brain, 1,000 lies that they live by. So if you were to say to them, I like you, their brain, the distorted part goes, what do they want? They're playing me. That's the distorted lie. Or somebody doesn't answer their text. Oh, I guess they rejected me. That's the lie. So lie after lie after lie. So when Paul says in Romans 12 that you're transformed by the renewing of your mind, that is a bigger challenge for complex trauma, because you're taking a very distorted mind and changing that. But here's what I want you to get. Do you realize in the distorted mind, every person they tried to reach out to be a friend, got rejected? Their history is, if you try to trust people, you'll get let down. That has been proven 100% proof. They have got years of evidence that you can't trust a soul. So now you come and say, you need to have your mind renewed. But I got all the facts. I got evidence, years of evidence. So the illustration I use with clients is this. Let's say you're a kid on the roof, I'm your dad, and I come out and say, jump off the roof, I'll catch you. And you jump off the roof and I don't catch you. But you're a kid. Kids hope. And I say, oh, I'll catch you next time. Get back on the roof and jump again, and I don't catch them. Kids hope. They do that time after time after time. But then there'll come a day they stop hoping and they'll stop trusting. Let's say my wife comes out and says, you jump off the roof, I'll catch you, dad's a jerk. And mom doesn't catch you either. Now you got both parents not catching you. Okay, Let's say Jesus comes along, or the most healthy person in the world, and this is now 30 years later, you're an adult, and they say, jump off the roof, I'll catch you. And you're not a hope. I've got years of evidence that anybody that promises to catch me will catch me, never happens. And so that is the challenge of renewing the mind. So renewing the mind isn't just something done in academia devoid of emotions. To renew the mind is done in this distorted world of emotions. And that makes it very difficult. Okay? So let me back up here just a bit. Okay. Okay, so this is the diagram I use with clients. So in the circle, you'll see trauma, pain, okay? So then trauma, pain, fight, flight, freeze, okay? So what is really important for clients to understand is this. In a healthy family, if a child faces trauma, pain, they get full of fear. And they want to go into fight, flight, but the parent comes along and says, no. I'll help you. I'll support you through this. I'll teach you how to handle it. And they walk through that circle and they come out the other side stronger, more mature, with a greater toolbox. And so what they then learn is problems aren't bad. Problems are growth opportunities. Problems are actually good things in life. Do you want to have some complex trauma? The child goes into the trauma and pain. Nobody helps them. They just get punished for not handling it properly. So they try it again. Nobody helps. They just get pain and then pain added on pain because they get punished. So fight, flight, freeze is their only option. But in their brain, problems are bad. Difficult times, nothing good ever comes out of it. So don't ever go there. Okay. Now, the greater the trauma, the pain, remember, the brain then has to try to protect the child even more. So it says, why wait around until the pain hits you and then fight flight? Let's back up your fight flight departure escape hatch to when you start feeling any uncomfortable emotions. Then let's fight flight. Let's not wait for pain. So as soon as you start feeling stress, I'm out of here. So you just are embarrassed, I'm out of here. And so all uncomfortable emotions, now I fight flight. Now the brain says, why wait till you're uncomfortable? There's still a good chance you're going to get hurt. Let's back that up. So now I'm going to be hypervigilant. So I'm going to walk in a room, and I'm not going to look to see people accurately. I'm going to look for danger. So I'm going to check everybody out. And in case you didn't know it, addicts or complex trauma people have sophisticated radar systems. They read people better than anybody else in the world. Problem? It's distorted. Some of it's true, some of it's not. So let me take you to the next link. So with the text, I didn't answer the text. What did the brain do? It created danger where there was no danger. They read danger into circumstances. So they did a research thing. They took a kid from a healthy family, a kid from complex trauma, and they showed them pictures of human faces. So they showed them happy face, both said happy. They showed them an angry face, both said angry. They showed them a sad face, both said sad. Then they showed them a blank face. Do you want to know what the complex trauma kid said? That person's angry. They read anger in where anger wasn't. So what the brain keeps doing is backing it up to protect you until you actually create any reason to run away. You create what you're trying to avoid. So another way to say this, I say that people with complex trauma awfulize everything or they jump to worst case scenario. So I didn't answer a text, he must hate me. Well, that is so far from the truth, but that's where your brain goes. Let's go to the worst case scenario and prepare for that just in case. So guess what happens now? You never give any relationship a chance because you're running at the first thing you imagine is wrong. So now you're actually creating the trauma you're trying to run away from. And that is what begins to happen. as the trauma gets more and more severe. Okay? Brent. So I'm going to come to that in the 50, but let me give it to you now. Okay, so the worst thing for a kid from complex trauma is to have everything go smoothly. So they've lived their life waiting for the other shoe to drop. So if things are going smoothly, just wait, something bad's going to happen. So guess what happens when they get into recovery and they start healing? Things start going smoothly. Their relationship's better, they got a job, they got their kids talking to them again. And their brain subconsciously is going, this is going to blow up in my face very soon. You know what? Let's just get it over with. So let's create chaos. So people from complex trauma hate chaos, but they need it to feel normal. So if things are going smoothly, they will sabotage that smooth stuff by creating chaos and ruining stuff to get them back to what feels normal. So it becomes a self-defeating loop that feeds off of itself. And that's very, very difficult. I had a lady who had been in an abusive relationship, married for years, finally got out of it, started coming to Finding Freedom, did tons of healing, and after a few years met a wonderful, wonderful man that I knew. She came to me after about 6 months. She said, I'm thinking of ending this relationship. Why? It's going too smoothly. Something bad's got to be happening soon. And so she was ready to sabotage her first chance at a healthy relationship because of that fear. And that is so common. Let me give it to you another way. Let's say you have a kid who wants dad's validation. And so they get good marks in school. They do their chores. And then dad keeps blowing up and hitting them and getting angry at them. And so they say, must be me, I gotta try harder. So they're a people pleaser, a perfectionist, they try hard, they do more chores, they get better grades at school, and dad's nice for a while. And so they start getting their hopes up. And then dad blows up and they're, not only did they get hurt, but their hopes got dashed. So there's two dynamics now happening at the same time. Kids hope, they'll get their hopes up again, dashes. You all know the age when kids stop hoping in complex trauma? Between 10 and 13. And they say, why bother getting my hopes up again? Because it's always going to play out the same way. So now they get into recovery and they start doing well and they get this dilemma. Do I get my hopes up or not? Because if I get my hopes up, what happens if I fail? That's what I've gone through all my life. So many clients will say, you know what? I'm going to sabotage my recovery because I don't want to get my hopes dashed again. And I've watched that happen thousands of times. So it's a real dilemma. They want to hope, but they're afraid to hope. Because having hopes dashed is one of the most painful things a person can go through. So everything's designed to protect against that. But again, what you're doing is you're creating the very thing you're trying to get out of. And that is that loop that goes on. Okay, so now what I want to do, if I can find it, there we go. So danger hits. So just imagine you're driving and a car pulls in front of you and you slam on the brakes. A bunch of different things happen in your brain at that moment that you might not be aware of. Number one, so there's two chemicals that your brain secretes in large doses when we're in great danger. Number one is cortisol. And cortisol is what stimulates adrenaline. So the whole point of that is it gives you the energy to fight or flight. So the brain is trying to help you out by shooting you with adrenaline or cortisol, and then that gives you the energy to run really fast or to fight really hard, okay? So that is the purpose. Second thing cortisol does. So how many of you remember where you were 9/11/2001 when you saw the two jets go into the Trade Center? Why? That's cortisol. Cortisol burns memories in. And what it's saying is never forget this so you don't get hurt by this again. Okay? Now what we're going to find here is these are what we call the body's adaptive systems. So we're going to talk about adaptive and maladaptive, okay? So an adaptive system is a one-time danger, a shot of cortisol, energy to fight flight, burns in the memory, and now your body relaxes again, you're back into safety, but that's all been logged away. That's the way it was designed. Complex trauma takes that same system and makes it maladaptive. So here's what happens in complex trauma. You have cortisol shooting into your brain all the time. Your brain wasn't designed for that. It was designed to just happen once in a while in extreme situations. Complex trauma, it's happening every day. That is maladaptive for a couple reasons. So the first is this. Our brains have the left and right hemisphere. In between them is a little bridge that joins the right and the left. What we know about how the brain saves a memory is it creates the memory and it divides it into two pieces and stores one in one side of the brain and one in the other. And the two pieces are this, the details of the memory and the emotions of the memory. No. Okay, very good point. So cortisol can be released when you have your first high. So that gets burned into your brain. So the brain always wants to go back to that positive memory, and the brain always wants to avoid the negative memories. Okay? Okay. So now with complex trauma, so let me give you an example. So if a person has been raped, they can remember the details of what happened, the clothes, the smells, where the sun was, all of that, and the emotions they felt, okay? So those are burned in. Now, if complex trauma, what it does is burns that bridge. So most addicts have gaps in their memory because there's no bridge to connect the detail memory with the emotion memory. So they'll have years they don't remember a thing. And if you talk to any addict, they have a lot of pain around the fact they can't remember much of their childhood. That's the result of too much cortisol because of complex trauma. But here's where it gets tricky, okay? So in Winnipeg, we have what we call the North End, which is basically the lowest income suburb, the slums, the gangs, the drugs. It's the worst part. What can happen if a person grew up in the North End, let's say, and complex trauma is they don't have a lot of memories of the North End. But if I was to drive them into the North End, they would start getting fidgety. And they're just ready to bolt out of the car. They don't know why. They have no memory. But the emotional memory is still awake. And it's triggering them to fight flight, but they have no understanding of why. So what people say to me sometimes is, why do I have to worry about dealing with my past? And I say, well, if you don't, it still triggers you. Now, here's the other flip side of that. You will get some people with complex trauma that you say, tell me about your childhood, and they'll go into great detail, but it's like they're reading from the encyclopedia. Blah, 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 this happened, there's zero emotion. So they got the details, they just don't catch the emotion. So they're reading these grocery lists, but it does nothing to them. So that's the two things that can come from the cortisol burning that bridge. So here's the good news. Once a person's in a safe place, the cortisol stops pumping. The bridge starts healing. They start getting memories back. And it's almost like God designed it is, I'm not going to let you have those terrible memories until you're in a place where you can actually handle them. Because to give them to you when you're not in a safe place would just drive you further into fight, flight, freeze. So once you're safe and growing, I'll release those enemies as that bridge starts to heal. Now that's wonderful news, but it brings a downside. Because many clients say to me, I don't know if I want to remember. It might even be worse than I thought or imagined. I'm scared to start getting into that can of worms. So you have to be very, very careful of not trying to get them dealing with memories till they first have the support and the tools to handle the memories. Otherwise, it can just drive them right back into the problem. Okay. Next thing, so that's the cortisol. Okay, so I'm going to jump back to here. So you see where the FFF goes down at danger at the very top of the line. If you were to make a great big circle there, that's the trigger, and that the greater the danger, the greater the cortisol. So what happens in that nanosecond when cortisol is released is this massive escalation of emotion and energy. So this person is sitting calmly, and then they get triggered by danger, and then they're another person. They go crazy. They go into crazy land. They're angry over the top. They are panicking and running over the top. So in that moment, and it's just a nanosecond, when cortisol is released, they get this intense escalation of emotion and an intense reaction. And that is all designed to protect them. The faster you react and the greater intensity with which you react, the safer you will be. Now, here's what happens in recovery. Do people know what borderline personality is? Okay. So borderline personality is a person that goes from 0 to 100 in a nanosecond, and they go from being normal to crazy in a nanosecond is what it boils down to. Borderline personality, basically everybody with complex trauma ends up with borderline personality, just not diagnosed. But here's what happens. They can be the sweetest, loving people with all their friends and acquaintances. Get them in an intimate relationship where they get triggered and they're crazy lady in a nanosecond. They get a different personality. They're threatening, they're running, they're calling people names. They are doing the most rash, crazy stuff in a nanosecond. And so those triggers send that person into that nanosecond. Just so you understand borderline personality disorder, it's not just that escalation. It's really two things that are underneath, which we have found out. It used to be said by psychiatrists that there's no hope for borderline personality people because of that. But with understanding it's a response to severe complex trauma, the two things are this. Number one, there's so much shame that the fear is you're going to expose my shame and expose how bad I am. So anything that threatens me as far as failure, criticism, making fun of me, I will explode. Or secondly, and this is the bigger one, there is an overwhelming fear of abandonment. So if anything looks like you might abandon me, I will go crazy. And so those are the two main triggers, failure and fear of abandonment, that are all part of that. And so it's that extreme response in the light of potential abandonment and potential exposure of shame. So that is the cortisol thing there, is that rapid escalation. Okay, now let me go back to the second one, which is oxytocin. Oxytocin is the beautiful drug that God built in to us that causes us to feel emotionally connected. So it's the attachment chemical. So here's how it is done. It's what makes you feel in love, okay? And connected to somebody else. It's fascinating to me that it also has a pain numbing element to it. And so we see it in childbirth, okay? So if you think of, if God didn't give us oxytocin to numb the pain and to feel connection, and you had a little person going down this little wee hole and ripping the inside of you apart and causing you pain, when they came out, you'd murder them. Because there would be zero love for them. There would be only anger and hatred. So God introduced oxytocin, which helps with the pain. And then when they come out, you go, oh, I love you. And you hug them. And you're the sweetest thing. That's oxytocin talking. And then so in childbirth, oxytocin is released in huge quantities in the woman's brain. Men miss out on that part. Then the second time is when a mother is nursing. So I remember when my wife nursed our first child, and she had blisters and that, and it was painful. But she was going, oh, this is the sweetest little kid. I love him so much. That's oxytocin talking. It helps the connection. Now think of it in terms of complex trauma. What happens when a child's in danger? They want to run to get a hug from their protector. That's oxytocin. And what happens in the parent when they see their child in danger? They want to run and hug them and protect them. That's oxytocin. Okay? So oxytocin is designed to send you to love, protect, and nurture somebody who's hurting. Okay? Yes. Okay, so I'm going to come to a couple different avenues here. So the next thing is oxytocin is also released in mild doses when you get a hug and when you get a kiss. So the body responds and you go, oh, that feels good. You melt. You feel connected. I always say, when is the only time men pat each other on the bum? In sports. And all of a sudden, that's oxytocin, and we're in this together, we're bros, and let's all hug each other. That's the oxytocin that gets released, okay? So it's designed to create connection. And that's part of what ecstasy is about. It releases large doses of serotonin that has a similar response. Okay, now let me show you what happens with the complex trauma. It can go in two different directions, okay? So children that grow up, and they're afraid oxytocin is released, but mom doesn't come. Mom smacks them and says, grow up. Quit being a wimp. Quit being a suck. Now they got all this oxytocin that's being released, but they can't follow it in its natural design. And so something happens that gets twisted and blocked and distorted in that system inside of them. And so what can happen in some cases with women from severe complex trauma is when they have their own children, they feel no connection. Because that system's been so messed up. But then there's another thing that can happen. A child that's basically living with an oxytocin deficit. So they're feeling oxytocin. They're wanting to run and get love and encouragement. It's not being reciprocated. If it was reciprocated, then the oxytocin would deepen and they would feel connected, but it's not. So they feel the oxytocin and it's empty after that. So there's a deficit inside of them. First person they run into that loves them and wants to sleep with them, oxytocin city, I'm in love. And in dealing with addicts, you want to know the hardest person for them to let go of? Their first love. Why? Because for the first time, oxytocin was acted on, and it released chemicals. Okay, now I'm going to jump you to this here. Oxytocin is all about your limbic system. Okay, remember that? Love, the feeling of love. And our culture's made billions off of what I'm going to tell you right now. What is God's design for dating? You feel the limbic triggered, I'm attracted. Then your cerebral cortex kicks in and says, does that person have character? It's not feelings that make a relationship last and healthy. It's character. So let's just keep the limbic system in check and check out their character. Let's do this wisely. Do you want a complex trauma? Says, limbic system, I'm in love. Now let's take the distorted cerebral brain and create a fantasy of my knight in shining armor, who's going to fix everything. Let's put on blinders and ignore all the red flags about their character because I'm in love. So how do people make choices for a relationship? Has nothing to do with character. It's all about limbic. Oxytocin twisting the brain into saying I'm in love. So being in love, they feel love. I always say to clients, I don't doubt you love your children. I don't doubt you feel love for your partner. But don't tell me you love them in actions, because your actions belie that you love them every day. Because you neglect them, you disrespect them, you do all kinds of hurtful things to them. That's not love. You feel oxytocin, but don't mistake that for love. It has to be followed through in character and actions that are loving to be truly love. So oxytocin is designed as a powerful thing to bring a connection, but it gets all screwed up. Okay, now let me take it another step. One way to look at complex trauma, abuse, neglect, abandonment, all of that, is a child with complex trauma has never attached emotionally to a significant person. So a complex trauma never truly connected emotionally with mom or dad. So they've always felt alone. Nobody wants to connect with me. That's part of what's going on. Mom and dad haven't followed through their oxytocin to love me and nurture me. So complex trauma is lack of attachment or connection. This is so critical for church and recovery. And so it's a connection attachment problem at the very core. Do you want to know what pornography and sex addiction are about? They're about pseudo connection. So what happens in complex trauma is a child wants to connect, but they're afraid to connect. Because the shame says, if anybody, I connect with anybody and they get to know me past my mask, they're going to see what the real me is like and reject me and abandon me. So I want intimacy, but I'm afraid of intimacy. Wonder if there's any fake intimacy around that gives feelings of intimacy, but not the openness of intimacy. So guess what bar rooms are all about? Superficial intimacy. They create feelings of connection, but it's a millimeter deep as far as the conversations go. Guess what happens with our children today with their cell phones? They can say, I texted my friend 1,000 times today. And they go, we're so close. And you look at their text and it doesn't go below a centimeter. It's superficial. Sports is superficial connection for men. Pornography and one-night stands and sex addiction, they create the deepest feelings of intimacy without the cost of a relationship. Without the cost of true intimacy. So I get sex addicts and porn addicts coming to me all the time, and they want to approach it just by, I can't look at this, I can't watch this, etc. And I go, that's all good, but if you want to deal with this addiction, you got to learn to connect with somebody who's healthy. Because you got to find out the beauty of intimacy in a healthy relationship, and then all these other things will start to drop off. You can't stop them by willpower. You have to create healthy intimacy. So again, we come back to the intimacy. Healthy relationship is so crucial for recovery. So that's, again, part of this whole oxytocin piece. Next thing that happens with oxytocin, it's like I said in the first part of our day, number one addiction beyond drugs, alcohol, is a relationship. Anybody that gives me the feeling of being loved, I've become addicted to. Because I just say, keep telling me, keep making me feel in love. Because when you've got so much shame and never felt love, anything that feels like love is great. Now, understand then, abused women and abused men in abusive relationships, they will stick in them, not because it makes sense to stick in them, to us, but to them, that little few crumbs of positive, loving stuff makes it worth it. And so they don't think they could ever get somebody who would love them consistently. So put up with the abuse just to get a few crumbs here and there, and that gets the oxytocin going. And so you can't just go to them and say, this guy's a dirtbag, get rid of him. No, because there's still a few crumbs possible there. And their distorted cortex will say, we can go back to the way it was in the beginning when their best foot was forward and everybody was a honeymoon. No, you can't. But that's what their brain wants to do. So oxytocin does tremendous damage as far as training them to approach relationships in a way that is eventually destructive for them. Okay? So I covered the limbic and the cerebral cortex. So what you have to understand is this. We're going to come to this trigger thing over and over again. When it comes to dealing with complex trauma, you want people to become self-aware. So there's an educational element. Then there's a therapeutic element. There's wounds they need to heal from. Stuff they've never been honest about. They need to talk about and cry about and do all of that important healing work. It's painful, but it leads to a pleasure that they've never had before when they start to heal. But then they need relationships that are healthy and a support network. And then the next one, which is the hardest, is they need to develop tools for the triggers. So here's the trick. Remember, it's a nanosecond when they're triggered? You ever tried to change your mind in a nanosecond when you're angry? Your anger flares up, and for like half a nanosecond, your brain says, don't say what you're going about to say. And you're trying to rein that in and say, no, don't say it. No way. You're going to say it. It is adrenaline fueled. It is powerful, and it's reinforced. So what we're saying to addicts is, learn all of this about yourself. Grow, but you're going to get triggered. And then when you're triggered, in that nanosecond, you got to choose to live a different way. And you got to choose, instead of going to the old toolbox, to go to the new toolbox. And they go, yeah, good luck with that. That is how hard it is. Because you are fighting against cortisol that has now been a maladaptive thing in your life that gives you energy to do the wrong thing, not the right thing. And you're trying to change it at that level. And that is hard. So you want to know one of the worst things Christians can do? Is to say to people from complex trauma, just get over it. Just make up your mind and stop doing it. What Christians have tried to do is to make sanctification, the process of maturity, non-messy and instant. There's a magical switch you just flip and you're holy. You want to know what it is for a complex trauma person? Growth is the messiest thing in the world. I tell people, when complex trauma people come into the church, just picture these are a whole bunch of toddlers coming into your home. They don't know how to do anything. They'll make a mess everywhere. They'll fail and fall on their face. You should be okay with that. When a child is learning to walk, you don't get mad at them on the first day and say, you just took one step. Get on with it, buddy. You should have it by now. You're happy for one step. And you realize it's a slow, messy process, but they get there. Same with complex trauma. But the church has very little patience for messiness. And until we develop that, we will hurt the very people we should be helping. Because we will drive them away, because we want instant fix. But here's the point. It's not about what's best for them. It's about what keeps us feeling comfortable. We don't like being pushed out of our comfort zone and dealing with messy people, that's yucky. And it just, they should all be neat and tidy and all of that. And so it's our issues that have to be looked at in that regard. Okay? Anything further you want to ask on that?
Just thanks a million. As I mentioned earlier, I have to come to a chemical concert.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
So the word
service. Okay. Very good. Okay. So all of us would wish that a person from addiction or complex trauma would come into recovery and they want to live. So picture a highway with two guardrails. That's God's design of healthy. Okay. Outside of healthy is what the Bible calls sin. So sin just means you miss the mark, so you step outside of healthy. And we've given it all kinds of weird definitions, but that's all it is, okay? So we wish that everybody coming into recovery would just want to live within the guardrails of healthy, and they're committed to it, etc. Problem is, not a lot of people that come into recovery really want to live the rest of their life inside that boundary. That's why Jesus called it a narrow road. It's restrictive. You can't just be your own boss and do whatever you want, be irresponsible. You got to start being healthy, and that puts restrictions on your life, and they don't like that. And so they want to live outside of healthy. And here's what many churches do. God has said we should love them. So let's take meals to them. Let's lend them money. You know what you're doing? You're not loving them. You're actually hating them because you're enabling them to stay unhealthy. And you're saying, it's okay, be as unhealthy as you want. We'll just fund it for you. You are signing their death notice by doing that kind of stuff. So what is very important is that many churches, and I grew up in one, were to love our neighbor as ourself. Fundamental teaching of the Bible. But what did that mean? It meant two things that were wrong. Number one, there's no boundaries. And so, if somebody keeps stepping outside of healthy, you just take them back, never let them experience the painful consequences. You take the consequences away for them and just be nice. And then that was the second one, love is syrupy sweet. You just give, sacrifice. It doesn't have a tough side. So when I got sick and I had to go on disability, what happened in our life is that I basically became unavailable as a dad. I was just too sick to be there. My kids were 1, 3, and 4 at the time. And so for the next years, they grew up without a dad. So all my kids went through complex trauma. And my son, who's the oldest, when he got into his teens, he got into drugs, alcohol, very badly. And at 18, we just said, you can't continue to live here if you're going to be that way. And lots of people were saying, oh, that's not how a Christian should act. And he left. And a lot of Christians said, I could never have done that because he could have gone out and killed himself. He could have overdosed. And I said, I got to trust God with that because I can't be following him around trying to make sure he doesn't do something stupid. A year later, I got a phone call from my son. And he said, Dad, I realize now you were right. And the life I thought would be happiness is not happy at all. Could I come back home and I want to live inside those boundaries? And I have a wonderful relationship with my son today, but it took me everything I had to have that tough love because I didn't want to go there. I just wanted to keep making it easy for him to be in my family with no consequences. And so that is a huge issue for a lot of churches that they really, I think, do a lot of damage. Yes. Yes. So what happens, I think, with Christians is if you do tough love or set boundaries, we naturally feel guilty because it feels like we're being cruel. And then if I know I wasn't there when they were little, I already have guilt over my parenting. And so the number one thing that kids from complex trauma use to keep manipulating their parents to not have consequences is guilt. And parents just jump like a puppet on a puppet string. And kids learn how to use that guilt manipulation better than anything else. Yeah. Okay, so let me just do this little bit, and then we'll take a break and then go on. Back away from what we've been talking about, and I want you just to see. So we saw complex trauma comes from abuse, neglect, abandonment, and 12 needs not being met. What causes those environments to ever happen in the first place? So it really goes back to a very biblical concept, and that is God designed the family to have children, but children to be healthy need an authority figure in their life to protect them and to teach them, okay? And so there's a hierarchy within a family. What happens in complex trauma is the person in authority doesn't use their power to do what's best to protect the family. They use their power to be selfish. And they go, I'm the boss. I can have everything the way I want it. I can do whatever I want. I can make everybody serve me. So complex trauma always comes out of an abuse of authority in the authority position in a family. And then what happens down as that works its way down? This person in authority who's selfish has children, and they have needs. But those needs to a selfish person are inconveniences. They cramp his style. And so they begin to see that child as a bit of a frustration, a burden, a pain, a nuisance. And the child thinks the parents are right. So what the parent does is distort reality. So they don't say, I'm the selfish one. You guys just have legitimate needs that I should be meeting. What does the parent say? Quit being so selfish to the kids. And the kids go, oh, I guess I'm selfish. Maybe I shouldn't have needs. Maybe I should never ask anybody for anything. And so they start feeling guilty that they're selfish every time they have a need. And they feel like they're a burden and a pain to anybody that will get too close to them. And so that begins to happen inside the child. So what the child then does, and this is where it starts to change stuff. They go, we will not have needs, and we will meet every wish of dad's. Guess who's the parent now? The children. And who's the kid? The dad. Now this can then work into various things as the child gets older. Because what has the child now done through their childhood? Sacrificed all their needs, given up all of their desires. So some get to their teen years and they say, F everybody, I'm going to be selfish now. I'm going to be my own boss. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. Because what has their dad trained them with? The way to be happy is to get whatever you want. And so here's the interesting thing with addicts. They hate their dad or mom, and they said they'd never become like them. And guess what they became like? The very thing they hated. So it's a system that creates a hatred of it, but it ends up reproducing it. And so it always ends up being a person in authority, abusing that authority. So what God shows us over and over again is this. And Paul says when he gives qualifications for elders, don't put a person in a position of authority unless they've got great character. Because the damage they can do if they abuse that position of power is humongous. The bigger the church, the more damage you can do. So that is one of the most sacred responsibilities, is to be a person of godly character whenever you're in a position of authority. And the Bible tries to protect that. But here's what's happened in our society today. On the job, you act like a professional. What does that mean? That's not being professional. You hear that all the time. What they're basically saying is, you don't need character, just on the job. So on the job, act with integrity, act honestly, act with kindness and grace to people. Doesn't matter how you act at home. What I say to addicts and complex trauma people is, you can do that act for a while, but what happens when you get really triggered and want to be really selfish? You throw all of that professional behavior out the window. Okay, so let me give you another thing. Think of when you get triggered. So imagine some of you are borderline personality, so you understand very quickly when you get triggered. This anger, this panic comes into play. You say and do things you later regret greatly. You feel a lot of guilt afterwards. But when you get triggered in that moment, everything inside of you is just focused on your needs. What I need right now. So what I tell clients is, when you get triggered, you become a narcissist. Everything becomes all about you. And so you can be the most loving, sacrificing, humble person, but as soon as you get triggered, you're the exact opposite. You're a narcissist, so you better do this for me right now. And I want this, no questions asked, and you become totally self-absorbed and self-consumed. So what complex trauma does, it's created by narcissists who then create narcissists, and they can grow, but their narcissism will get easily triggered. And I have watched leaders in church who've never dealt with their issues, and they get triggered, and the damage they do when they're triggered in their narcissistic state, it just makes you sick and want to cry. And that is what that is all about. It creates the narcissist. So here's God's design. Children, parents above them. What happens in a complex trauma family? It's your solar universe again. Who's the sun in your universe? Dad or mom? Everything revolves around what they want. Now, guess what happens when these people grow up and get into relationships? They will take either the dad role or the revolving around dad role. So that's codependency. So you have the one person in the middle where everything's about them. They want what they want, et cetera, et cetera. The other person thinks the way to get love is meet all their needs. Give them whatever they want. Make your life all about them. And you revolve around them. You did not make a healthy relationship. You made a codependent, sick relationship that usually ends in abuse. But that is where you take the design, which is vertical, and switch it to horizontal, with something in the center and the other revolving around. And so, sadly, people with complex trauma, they don't understand healthy authority. They don't understand a healthy intimate relationship. They only know somebody's got to be the center and somebody's got to be the outside orbit. That's all that makes sense to them. So that's how they go about relationships, and they do not work. It is impossible to have a healthy intimate relationship when that is the model. Okay, let's take a break.